Harper Audio presents The Financial Lives of the Poets by Jess Walter, read by the author. Poets have to dream, and dreaming in America is no cinch. Saul Bellow. Chapter 1, Another 7-Eleven. Here they are again, the bent boys, baked and buzzed boys, wasted red-eyed, dry-mouthed high boys, coursing narrow bright aisles, hunting food as fried as they are, twitchy hands wadding bills they spill on the counter, so pleased and so proud, as if they're the very inventors of stoned. And behind the counter, the ever-patient Rajiv makes half-lidded eye contact with me as he rings up another patchouli-foul giggler, Reese's Pieces, Pick Six Lotto, Red Bull, and a Cheddar Jack Taquito. Rajiv probably thinking, these kids, eh, Matt? Or maybe not, because Rajiv doesn't know my name and I don't wear a name tag. I'm just the middle-aged guy who leaves my gunmetal sedan running when I come in after midnight, when I can't sleep. And I've forgotten to get milk at a regular store. Milk for the kids' cereal. In the morning, before school, the milk is like $9 a gallon. For years, recent immigrants like Rajiv have been political Rorschach. See turban, think terrorist, and you're a red American. Assume Indian neurosurgeon, fluent in five languages, stuck serving morons at midnight for minimum wage, and you're blue, like me. Of course, I have no more proof that Rajiv was a doctor in Delhi than some Texas trucker does that he's a bomber. Rajiv may have jockeyed a 7-Eleven in India, too, for all we know. So impeccable is he with change. Effortlessly plastic bagging Hostess Snowballs and Little Debbie's Power Bars and Mountain Dews. No, wait, dude, chocolate milk and pork rinds. As yet another stoner reassesses the aisles. And ooh, Cool Ranch Doritos. Whenever I come in here, I invariably think of my own boys. At home, asleep in their beds. Still a few years from such trouble. Or do they already dream of midnight at the Slurpee machine? Two tattooed white kids in silk sweatsuits step to the line behind me, and I tense a little, double-pat my wallet. The fat one juggles a half rack of malt liquor 40s while his partner rolls away to yell in his cell, Chulo, don't do shit till we get there, yo! The door closes behind the cell phone gangbanger, and I'm finally at the front of this line with my milk. Hey, Rajiv. When something goes terribly wrong at the soda fountain, and the clerk and I turn together, drawn by a hydroponic squeal from deep inside the cave of a blue hoodie, a pierced, lank-haired skater, board strapped to his back, has spilled his 72-ounce Sprite and now believes it is the funniest fucking thing in the world. And Rajiv nods wearily at me again, no doubt wishing he were back cutting craniums at Mumbai General. He casually swings my jug past the scanner. Then he hands me my milk, for the boys, for their cereal, in the morning. It's like $9 a gallon. I also think of my mother when I come in here. She was dying several years back and became obsessed with the terrorist attacks in New York. I hated that she should be so racked with random anxieties as she wasted away, thumb-jacking the morphine pump like it could save her life. It couldn't. Her fear of dying manifested as a fear of things she had no reason to fear anymore. Random crime, global warming, and most of all, terrorists on airplanes. Matt, she asked right before she died, do you think there will be another 7-Eleven? I thought about correcting her, but I just said, no, Mom, there won't be any more 7-Elevens. Nice slippers, yo, says the cell phone gangbanger when I come outside with my milk. He's 20 or so, in a sagging shark-colored tracksuit, black hair combed straight over his ears, elaborate tattoo rising out of his shirt at the base of his neck. And right out in the open, in front of this convenience store, he conveniently offers me a hit on a glass blunt, a little marijuana pipe shaped like a cigarette. I wave it off, but sort of wish I hadn't. It's been at least 15 years, but I didn't just spring from some relaxed, wasted suburbia with a Stoli martini in hand. I had my moments. In college, they used to call me Weed Eater because I devoured those Acapulco gold joints. Incense burning, black light on the walls, Pink Floyd thrumming down the dorm floor. Oh, and they're not technically slippers, but a casual loafer I got at the Nordstrom Rack with a gift certificate when I returned a cardigan that made me look like my grandfather. Of course, I don't tell the stoned kid that. I just smile and say, no thanks. But then I pause to get a closer look instead of continuing on to my car. Maybe I'm just curious about this clever pipe, or maybe it's the smell of the weed, or maybe it's just this swiveling looseness I'm feeling. but I'm still in mid-pause when the fatter white gangster joins us, flat-brim ball cap, worn side saddle. Now there are three of us standing in a little semicircle, as if waiting for a tea time. "Hey," says the one with the neck tattoo and the blunt, "dude here can give us a ride to the party." And I'm about to say that I can't give them a ride because I've got to get home and they look mildly dangerous, when Fat in the Hat says, "Thanks, man," like he's surprised I'd be so cool, and suddenly I want to be that cool. And then the fat kid looks down at my hands and laughs. "Damn, man, why you buy your milk here? Shit's like $9 a gallon." The clouds are low, like a drop ceiling suffused with light from the city. They slide silently overhead, and two dope-smoking bangers in tracksuits climb into my car.